Hi there, it's Nikki. I wanted to take a quick minute to make sure you knew about our free on-demand copywriting training. Whether you're brand new to copywriting or you just can't seem to hit your income goals, this training is for you. You'll learn the three secrets to landing freelance copywriting work without wasting time on frustrating job bidding sites like Upwork and Fiverr or cold calling strangers. And if you've listened to any of the student stories on this podcast, this is the exact same training they all got started with. I'm talking about KK, who's making six figures working part-time and who just retired her husband to help her run the business. Stuart, who replaced his full-time salary with freelance copywriting work and then some. Stacy, who hit six figures in 6 months, her very first year as a full-time freelancer. Ashley, who landed the in-house copywriting job of her dreams. They all started with this free training, and you can get started with that same training too. Sign up right now at freecopywritingtraining.com.
Welcome to the Build Your Copywriting Business podcast, where you'll get tips, tools, and training for new and aspiring copywriters, plus a few things even the established pros will want to know. My name is Nikki Krawczyk, and I've been a copywriter for more than 15 years, writing for multi-billion dollar companies down to solopreneurs and every size business in between. The Filthy Rich Writer team and I are here to teach you everything we've learned in our years in the industry so that you can craft a successful copywriting career of your own. To us, being filthy rich means having a job you love, being good at what you do, and making great money doing it. Let's dig in.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Build Your Copywriting Business podcast. Hey there, Kate. How are
you? Hello. I'm so well. How are you?
Oh, I'm super duper. Today, we are going to launch into talking super duper.
Super duper.
Super duper. It's Friday. We record these on Friday.
That's true. Real good.
Real good. There's sun. I'm happy camper. So today we are going to talk about portfolio websites. You already know that you need to have one. But in putting one together, there are a lot of mistakes that copywriters, especially newer copywriters, but actually, quite frankly, I know, Kate, you and I have both seen it on
my own.
Yeah, right.
My own is in dire need of updating. So yeah.
Exactly. Full disclosure, we both really should update our portfolio sites, but our focus has been on teaching our students to make their portfolio sites fantastic. We've also kind of reached the point in our careers where fantastically, very few people actually go to visit our sites before they hire us. But if you are in a different scenario, say, for example, you are newer to it, you are just building your portfolio site, or you are realizing that your portfolio site is not everything it needs to be, then this is the episode for you, or at least one of the episodes for you. So, Kate, first big mistake that people make on their portfolio sites.
Yes, is not having a benefit to the consumer, which in this case is your prospective client. So that's usually the first thing when someone comes to your homepage and that big header area, which, spoiler, if you look at my site, is a terrible example, so don't use it. You want to use that real estate. I mean, really throughout the whole portfolio, obviously thinking about your client, but particularly in that header area and subhead area. That's the first thing that they're reading. So if there's no benefit to them and why they should work with you as a copywriter, then you're going to lose them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a mistake a lot of people make when they sit down to write their portfolio sites is they don't treat it like the copy project that it is. Mm-hmm. Any other copy project, they would put together a creative brief, they'd go through all the points, they'd outline, they'd all that stuff. And I think for some reason, maybe it's because it's our own projects, copywriters tend to sit down and just try to like seat of their pants, write it all the way through.
And in whatever program they're using, if it's WordPress or Square, you're writing copy directly in that system versus doing a copy doc like you would for a client to deliver.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a great point. Highly recommend A, doing a creative brief. B, if you're up for it, do a tone guide for yourself. Yes, it's your voice. Yes, it's your style, but put some actual thought into it so it's not willy-nilly and just writing off the, you know, off the cuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good practice anyway, right? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, so you did a tone guide. That's going to make it that much easier and faster to do tone guides for another client later on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but that not having the benefit is so common. And the thing is when someone lands on your website and they're interested in potentially working with you, they need to immediately, the first thing they need to understand is what they will get out of working with you. Because remember, it's our portfolio site, but it's not about us. It's about how we can serve our clients and our potential clients.
Yeah. And I think one of the most common things I see with students is they kind of panic and think, oh, but SEO and, you know, is my headline needs to have something so that I show up in search. And I think it gets it a little bit backwards of how people are finding your site in the first place. So what helps to remember going into writing your site is that more often than not, I would put a percentage, but, you know, if not 100% of the time, 90 to 99% of the time, folks are going to be coming because you provided them the link, whether that's in your signature of a pitch email, or you told them to check out your portfolio in your pitch email, or you handed out business cards if you have them. Don't need them. Don't freak out and think you have to get business cards now. But if that is something you have, or if you talk with someone and say, hey, oh, I'm interested in what you do, can you tell me more? You give them your website, you email someone your website to check out, you have it in your LinkedIn, you have it on social media, wherever it is. People are coming and they know you're a copywriter and they know what copywriting is. So keep that in mind because that point will come back up later with another big mistake we see in copy portfolios.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And before we hop into that, the SEO point, I just want to circle back on that. Yeah. A lot of people, and I know it's a big topic in the group, which we're going to address in a Facebook Live soon, but for our students. But you know, the thing is, I know it, like the idea of if I just put the right words on my website, then people are going to go into Google, search Boston copywriter, and I'll come up. Here's the thing. It's just not going to happen. You are not going to list for copywriter or for copywriter in your, unless you live in like a super small town in Alaska, maybe.
How many people are Googling?
Exactly. Nobody's searching for Moose Nose Alaska copywriter. So yes, you want to be using words that make sense in your, with what you do, with copywriting. But you're not going to get listed on search result pages for SEO. So you don't even have to really worry about it because it's not even a factor. So don't think about SEO. Don't worry about SEO. Just make sure that your messaging does convey that really, really strong benefit to consumer. Again, consumer being a potential client, someone who is coming to your site, to Kate's point, coming to your site and evaluating whether or not you're someone they want to hire.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you've been to Alaska.
Moose Nose. If you've been to Moose Nose, shoot us a little note. If Moose Nose exists, I'll be curious to find out.
I'm Googling that right after this recording.
Yes, exactly.
We'll have you know.
Buying a vacation home in Moose Nose, Alaska.
And start fact-checking our own podcast.
So that next point that you kind of started teasing, the education element. How much education is necessary, Kate?
Zero. If not zero, very close to zero. I hate speaking in absolutes. Anyone who's talked with us knows that life is gray. Life is a gray area. So I won't speak in black and whites. But I will say that just like with SEO and no one's going to be Googling you to find you as the copywriter they're going to choose, they're coming to your site and they have some sort of idea of what copywriting is. So even if they were Googling, even if you did pop up in search results, it's going to be for copywriting. So they know what copywriting is, right? So otherwise, you've sent a pitch. They have an idea of what value you have to offer, clearly. You've made that clear. So you don't have to tell them what copywriting is. You don't have to get into those. This is copy. This is marketing.
Yeah. I think it's very common, especially if you have not put together your creative brief and if you haven't done an outline, it's very common to get into that. The right words are important because copywriting does this because, and here's why it's so important. But remember, again, people coming to your site are not evaluating whether or not copywriting is something they need, or they don't know what it is. They, first of all, they know what copy is. They wouldn't be coming to your site if they didn't. And they're not evaluating whether or not they need at the point on the customer journey where they're coming to your website, they're not evaluating whether or not they need copy, their copy rewritten or whatever, new copy. They are evaluating whether or not you will be the person who is going to write their copy. So any educational copy on your website about why words are important or why copy is important is just taking away from the key message of why you are important and why you and what you can do for these companies and why these companies should choose you. Remember, you're not writing your website for your mom or your mom's friends who don't know what copywriting is. Like, yes,
exactly
your mom's
what I was going to say.
Because that's so true. Yes. Exactly. And yes, your mom is probably going to share your website with your friends because she's so proud of you and you're so fantastic, but they're not your target audience. Mm-hmm. So don't write your website to educate people about what copy is and why it's important. Again, write it to educate, quote unquote, educate about why you are the right person to write copy for them.
Yeah, such a great point. I think that's where that instinct comes from, is because you have those conversations and people are like, ooh, what is copywriting? What is that you do? Is it, you know, R-I-G-H-T-I-N-G, not W-R-I-T-I-N-G? And I hope I just spelled that correctly. I'm really bad at not typing. My brain thinks through my fingertips, so, you know, when I type. But anyway, I think it's the education is going to come out in those scenarios when you're having those conversations with someone, with your aunt, with your grandpa. My grandfather's never been on the internet, so that's a bad example. But with with those people that you want to explain what copywriting is, maybe, yes, you tell them what copy is and you have that conversation. Then you're like, oh, here's my site. But again, they're not going to be the folks that are hiring you necessarily. So,
Yeah, go back to that creative brief and write to your target audience. Which actually, and that kind of leads into the next one as well, your about page. And it's we kind of laugh about it in the course because, well, the about page, it's called About Me. So isn't it about me? Not really. In a way, your About Me page isn't really about you. It's about what you can do for your target audience, for potential clients.
Yes. So we do a lot of work with the USP, the unique selling proposition. And so that's a common place where you might put that, if not on your homepage or sooner, but expanding on that of, okay, what do you as a copywriter have to deliver? So to Nikki's earlier point that they're evaluating whether they want to hire you as a copywriter versus, you know, Joe, the copywriter, or Sally, the copywriter. Why you versus any of the other potential copywriters that they could hire and work with? And so I think a very common thing is to just, again, go right into that platform and start writing that about page and start writing why you got into copywriting and where you come from and all of that good stuff.
Why you're passionate about copywriting and why you've always loved writing. And
yeah, which, you know, a great point, because take a step back. Any copywriter should love writing or have at least some, you know, affinity for writing. So anytime you catch yourself, really step back and say, is this a selling point? Is this any different than any other copywriter? You know, being creative, being flexible, being any of the things that a client is already going to expect out of a copywriter or a service provider, quite frankly, not just a copywriter. So making sure anything you're writing on that page really stands out. And if you want to have a section of, here's how I got into copywriting and my story and my background, put that lower on the page. So check out some about pages in the world. I think the instinct is to just write one big paragraph about page and be done with it. But there's so many other ways to go about and tackle that page. And quite frankly, any web page that you're writing or any piece of copy, you know, that's why subheads exist. That's why, you know, different section breaks exist. So look at examples out in the world, and not just of copywriters, but maybe graphic designers, maybe Nike, maybe I don't know. I just thought of Lululemon because of Nike, I think. Doing word association now. But check out different about sites of different – check out your local grocery store's about page. You know, how do they section things off? Mm-hmm. A lot of them might have a mission statement or team. And so if it's just you, that might not make sense. But it might give you ideas for, okay, this section I'm going to talk about my USP and my – expand on that and what I'm bringing to the client. And then in this section, maybe I'll have like a fun facts thing. But not thinking of it as just one big pile on me, 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 me. Mm-hmm.
My story. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I think it's important to remember, not I think, I know it's important to remember, as much as it breaks our heart as writers, no one is going to read everything you write.
Yes.
You will, your mom will, but nobody else is going to read it. And so the thing is you need to put the most important information to the target audience, not your most important information, but the most important information to the target audience at the top of the copy. And then below that, the next most important piece of information. And then as you get further down the page, that's the reason that we say, you know, put your personal, like, oh, I have three dogs and I live in Moose Nose, Alaska. That goes at the bottom of the page because you know what? Yeah, absolutely. Include some personal information. You know, let them know that you are a person and that you're fun to work with, and you know you've been in Alaska for 20 years. But that doesn't belong at the top of the page because if a potential client gets to that page and reads that first, they're immediately going to leave because that's not what they care about most. And if they immediately leave, then they're going to miss all the other important information you have on there, the USP, what makes you different from other copywriters and what you bring to the table that other copywriters don't, and how that benefits companies and all that kind of really important stuff. You need to make sure that is the top so that they get those. So there's the highest chance possible that they are going to consume that information. So on the portfolio section itself, we call it a portfolio website because one of the main points is the portfolio. But in the actual portfolio mm-hmm. section itself, a really common mistake that I know Kate and I have seen hundreds, if not thousands of times by now, mm-hmm. Is a just portfolio section and then a bunch of images. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Yep. And sometimes those images, you can't even read the copy on those images, which is
even worse. If you are new to copywriting or you are building up your copywriting career, please don't discount this because it's a do as we say, not as we do.
It's one thing I've started to try to fix because I know it's probably the most important one, I would say, out of the bunch of things that we listed. Yes, the headline, you think, okay, that's the most important thing. But a lot of clients I know, and frankly, from working with other people and hiring them, you go straight to the portfolio. Mm-hmm. You might skip everything else. And maybe you go back to that later if you're unsure or on the fence or want to learn something more about the person that you might work with. But a lot of my clients just skip straight to that portfolio. I've been lucky to be on, whether it was interviews years ago or, you know, calls where they wanted me to walk through my portfolio. And that's what we go to is the pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the images are important, obviously. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're to show that you have done the work. It needs to be, you know, design piece, whether it's spec ads that you have worked on with a graphic designer, mm-hmm. Which you need to be working with a graphic designer. You can't just put up Word docs because then it doesn't demonstrate your ability to collaborate with the designer. Mm-hmm. Or whether it's produced pieces, awesome, great, and they need to be pieces you can read. But here's the thing. The pieces on their own only convey such a small, small part of the actual work mm-hmm. you did.
And when they say nothing about whether you addressed the brief, right?
Mm, yeah, great point, yeah.
They show copy, but it's like, how do I know that this was the brand's tone? How do I know, unless it's a super well-known brand, then maybe yes, but otherwise, there's zero context.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what we recommend is adding that context. Mm-hmm. For every piece you have there on your portfolio site, you need to have a description. You need to mm-hmm. describe who the client is, what they do, you know, what they sell or what their services are, that kind of thing, a little something about their target audience, or at least the target audience mm-hmm. for that piece. It does not have to be paragraphs and paragraphs.
I was gonna say, it should be everything you just said in like two sentences.
Two sentences max. Then you want to get into describing the project. What was – every project is a challenge, right? Every project is a puzzle to solve. And so you want to explain what was the challenge? What challenge did they come to you with? Well, we're trying to get to – this is the objective we're trying to meet. Mm-hmm. So describe what that is. And then this is the key part of all of these key parts – your strategy. Mm-hmm. How did you address that challenge? You really need to get into the thinking that you used in order to craft the copy. It can be very tempting to just kind of reiterate the copy in the section, but they can see that. What people can't see is the thing. Why did you choose these words? Why did you go with this concept? Why did you all that kind of stuff? Because that insight is so incredibly valuable. And it demonstrates that not only do you know how to type words into a computer, but that you can take really strategic thinking and creativity and mix the two in order to meet a client's objective. And not just that client, because you're going to have description for each piece. So you use that in one way for this client. And then this kind of client, which is a totally different client with a totally different tone and totally different objective, you show how you combine your creativity and strategy in that way. So you want to break it out for each project.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the last thing is, if you have them, results, but not letting yourself get hung up on that. So many of my projects, the client either doesn't share them, or quite frankly, they just taken out of context. There's no, you know, cool.
Not a wow factor.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It worked for them. It delivered for them, but it's not going to necessarily for someone who was outside of the project understand why they mattered. So If you have them, great. If you don't, it's okay too, because as we always say, copy is one element out of a lot of elements. So any results you get, are they going to be 100% attributed to the copy? Maybe, but
and open rates,
I was going to say open rates and click through rates potentially.
Yeah.
But a lot of other, like, you know, a sales page, how are they getting there? What's for sale? Yeah, exactly. What's the product? And even to that point with email, what's in the email that you're, you know, if they don't want it, then they're not going to click through. So it could be great copy to get them to click through. But if it's not the right thing for them, then, you know, the copy's not going to help there. So,
yeah. Yeah. So results, if you've got them and if they're really impressive results, you know, increased conversion rate, 30% or whatever. I'm literally picking numbers out of the air.
Yeah.
But results if you have them. And also, it's probably a good point to mention that you can always go back and ask a client.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of weeks, couple of months.
Especially because you're not gonna have
years might be pushing it.
But that's a great point. You're not gonna have results necessarily overnight for anything, especially even email. Like, yes, in the first day will you have something to show, but people sometimes open it a day later or whatever. So those numbers change. Mm-hmm. So knowing that, you know, have patience.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Then I think probably we talked a little bit about how you have to work with a designer, and that's a whole other episode. Yep. But just tuck that in the back of your head. I think the only other point is the contact page. It needs to be so easy for someone to get in touch with you. If they have to dig to find your contact page, or if they have to like
– or if it's just a form and there's no copy around it. Why are they contacting you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like contact for what though? You know, I think a lot of us make assumptions that people just know what to do and know what's going to happen, but people like to know. Think of it yourself. When you fill out a form, you're like, oh, are they going to call me? I don't want them to call me. So making sure, are you going to call them? Are you going to email them? When you do, what's going to happen? Are you going to hop on the call for a free call? Are they going to be charged? Are they committing to something with you already? Are they not committing to something with you already? Are you going to respond right away? Are you going to respond within 48 hours? What happens? Not a lot of copy, but it's such important expectations you're setting with it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Set the scene, set expectations, let them know why they should fill out this contact form, what they're going to get, likely a free call. Mm-hmm.
But even to that point, we always talk about free. That's not necessarily in and of itself enough. What's mm-hmm. what's going to be the benefit of that?
Yes, great point.
What do they get out of that free call?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, of course, and this is a point you always bring up, Kate, and I love it, them a time frame for when you're going to respond. As a client, as a business owner, to fill in this form and be like, all right, well, I've filled in it. Am I going to hear from them in an hour? Mm-hmm. Am I going to hear from them in a week? Am I ever going to hear from them? Can I stop looking? I really like their work. So mm-hmm. can I stop looking for other copywriters, or should I be, am I never going to hear back from this person? So I need to keep looking. So
that's a great point.
It's your point. I'd steal this one. This is a great piece of feedback that you give. To put, you know, say on your form, I'll be in touch within 24 hours, or I'll be in touch within 48 hours. And obviously, if you get it and you're sitting at your desk, you can be in touch a lot faster than that. Mm-hmm. But and also just make sure that you are, if you're going on vacation, or mm-hmm. you know, you have it over a weekend or something like that, and you're like, oh, I don't want to look at my email over the weekend. If you said 24 hours, you're in trouble. As if from the client side, if I were to send in a form to someone that said 24 hours and they did not get in touch with me in 24 hours, there's no way I would work with them. Because if I can't trust them on that one little thing that they told me they would be able to do, there's no way I'm going to hire them from anything else. Mm-hmm. So do bear that in mind. If you're saying 24 hours or 48 hours, or just make sure that that's a promise that you can keep. But setting that expectation is so fantastic. And then it's, we talk about this a lot, but it's, you're taking it off the client's plate. Mm-hmm. They don't have to worry about it now. They've given it to you. And it's just that first moment of you being like, hey, don't worry about it. I'm going to get in touch with you. You go back and do whatever you need to do. You know, you get back to work. I'm going to get in touch with you. And that is so valuable and quite frankly refreshing for a client. I mean, how many times have you reached out to a plumber or an electrician or a this or a that and filled out a form and been like, I wonder when I'm going to hear from them? Yep. Wouldn't it be great to be like, oh, I know I'm going to hear from them in XYZ hours at the very latest or longest period of time?
Such a good point. Yeah. It's important to remember we are service providers. And putting yourself, though, in the shoes of when you are the customer looking for a service. What do you like and what do you want? Because it's so easy to be like, oh, the client expected me to get back right away and I didn't, but like I was busy and this and that. And it's easy to make excuses for yourself, but think of it on the flip end. To Nikki's point, a plumber, filling out returns for, you know, and you need help from a clothing company and how long that takes and, you know, put yourself in the shoes. And so give your clients a little bit of grace, but also make sure you're giving them what they need to move forward and setting that expectation. They are now the customer. So remember, when you're the customer, remember how you like to be treated and what you want out of an mm-hmm. interaction. The other big piece of advice too that I always say, because people have heard me say this time and time again, and I will never stop saying it, test your form. Test your contact form, because you want to make sure, especially WordPress folks, if you hook that up to your email, you have to do a little bit of code on the back end. Squarespace, I think it's pretty straightforward and easy, but nonetheless, test it anyway and make sure if you're forwarding that to your email address that it's getting there and you're seeing it, because it's very easy if it doesn't work for things to just disappear and then you don't know. And that looks really, really bad on you.
That's terrible. You've lost work.
Yep.
Yeah.
Plus that copy that happens once they submit the form. It's again, a little bit of copy, but confirm that you've gotten the thank you, message received, and you can reiterate the timeline there. Put something there, but don't forget that copy's there, because it's very easy to just have the templated copy and never address it or update it.
Confirmed.
Yourself. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Success.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're a copywriter. All of your copy should be custom on your website. And I know two people will say, well, you know, there are calendar applications where people can book directly. You know, things like Calendly, things like Acuity, you can offer people the ability to just book that appointment right away. You can do that. I would say though, with two caveats. First of all, if you're going to incorporate that, incorporate one of those programs, you must make sure, because they sync directly to your calendar. So you must make sure that your calendar is updated, because it is intensely unprofessional for someone to book through your website and then for you to come back later and be like, oh, yeah, actually that time isn't available.
I'm on vacation. I have a doctor's appointment.
Yeah, that would be another one of those times where I'm like, actually, let's not reschedule. I'm going to find somebody else. Yeah, so you must, if you are going to offer that option, you have to take it very seriously, and you must. And assume, we were talking with one of the coaches the other day about appointment being booked earlier than they expected it to be booked, but the time was open on their calendar.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if you have it open on your calendar, and I did the same thing. I had someone book a call with me on January 1st one year. I didn't block it off because I assumed no one would want to call on January 1st. Surprise!
Never make assumptions.
Exactly. Yeah. If it's open on your calendar, assume that someone will book it. Yeah. So make sure that the only times you have open are times that you are truly willing and able to talk to someone. And then also too, I would if you give them that option on that page, personally, I would still give them a form, because there may be some people who are like, you know, I don't know if I'm ready to book a call at this moment. I want to get an email back and like have a little conversation with them first. And then, you know, maybe then I'm ready to book that call. But if they haven't been in touch with you yet, if they haven't had much communication, they might be hesitant to immediately book that call. They might want a little email back and forth with you first.
Yeah. It's so tempting to automate things to make our lives easier, but don't lose the personal touch. And I think this is one of the areas where you can have that personal touch and put clients at ease and make them feel comfortable. And so they're want to then go ahead and book that call. And it's not that much time, and it's not that hard to look at your schedule and recommend a time. It really isn't. So weigh how much time that's saving yourself.
Exactly. Or you can still use that Calendly or Acuity link a little bit further down the line. But here's the thing. If it's anything that is going to create a barrier to someone taking action, you need to either remove it or give an alternate. So which is why I say, if you have the Calendly or Acuity link, also have the form, you know, because like I said, there may be someone, if you just had the Calendly or if you just had a calendar link, a book this appointment link, and they weren't ready to do that, what are they going to do?
They're going to leave. Yeah.
Whereas if you also have a form and they're like, okay, I feel comfortable like shooting, I don't want to book an appointment yet, but I feel comfortable shooting them a message. And, you know, maybe I have a question about this, or maybe I have a question about that. Then they can do that. To Kate's point, you don't want to quote unquote automate and make it easier when in fact it's actually maybe easier for you, but not necessarily an easier or better experience for your potential client. Because again, who is this website for? It's not for you. It is for your potential client.
Yeah. And I'd be careful. Folks sometimes want to put their email address there as well. I would recommend not doing that. Just keep an eye on your spam. It might get wild. But not only that, that creates extra steps for your client. Again, they have to copy your email and then paste it into an email and then write the subject line and write a message, whereas a form makes it a little bit easier. It takes a lot of thought out. Here's my name. Here's my email. Here's my message that, you know, tell me a little bit about your project or your challenge or your needs. Give them some sort of prompt, not just message, so that they have, you know, some prompting versus emailing you, then all the prompting's on them. And that's, again, a little bit more work, a little bit more brain power involved for them. So if you can ease that, much, much better.
Absolutely.
And completely I will say too, I just thought of another point on the portfolio. Another big thing, take screenshots. Get Chrome has a full page screenshot. Let me see. Actually, I can hover over it. I think it's just.
I know they keep changing the name. Yeah.
Go full page.
It used
is what
to
I
be.
Have. Go full
Go
page.
Go full page.
Full page screen capture, and little extension. You can click it, and it'll do a full grab of a full site. So if you have a website that's, you know, scrolls and scrolls, you have a longer email, whatever it is, you can screen grab that. Or you can, you know, manually do a screen grab for smaller things. But a lot of folks want to link off to other sites. And one of the big things, there are actually many big things with that. One, links break all the time. You do not, and I used to have links in my portfolio. I might still have some. And people, I'd had people say, hey, by the way, did you know that link's broken? How embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Awful. Then they don't even see my copy, or it goes to a wrong page with copy that I didn't even do, or your client updates copy after, you know, a few months or years or whatever. And then mm-hmm. it's not even copy you wrote, and maybe not copy you stand behind. So not only is it not your writing at that point, but it might be bad writing. And so there's so many reasons why you want to avoid linking. And then third, that was the third one. I knew I'd talk myself through to the point. Is you don't want to send people away from your site. Yes, you can open the link in a new tab, and we recommend that for anything that's driving people away from your portfolio, but you still want to keep them on your site as much as possible. So screen grab keeps them on your site. It allows you can still see the full thing depending on your theme. You might be able to zoom in, zoom out, but it contains the work and makes sure it's what you intended and what you want your audience to see. It's not just,
yeah. Anytime you send anyone off your site, even if it's to look at a sample, you run the very, very real risk of them getting distracted. And then they forget to come back to your site, or they accidentally close the tab. And then you want to keep them hyper-focused on taking the next, back to the creative brief. What is the next step you want them to take? You want them to get in touch with you. So you want to make it easy for them to get in touch with you. And you don't want to have anything on this website that could distract from it. So don't link off the site to samples. Again, to Kate's point, they need to be on your website. Otherwise I have absolutely done the same thing early in my career and lost samples because I linked to them. They changed the page. I don't know where it's living now. And I never took a picture because
I feel like screen grabs weren't a thing though. At least when I first started, I remember it was very hard to take a screen grab, and I don't know that it existed.
Email was barely a thing when I got started, but, yes, but again, learn from us. But yeah, don't send people away from your website, or even LinkedIn, Instagram. Don't send people away from your website. The purpose of LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff is to get people
to your
website. So once they are there, keep them single-mindedly focused on getting in touch with you.
Yes.
So to that end, if you already have a portfolio site, you have now a nice long checklist to go through and make sure that your site is as good as it could be. And if you don't yet have a portfolio site, lucky you, because now you can go back and create a creative brief and execute on that creative brief, create a website that is the best it could possibly be from the get-go. And I do think too, it's worth saying, it's not carved in stone. You will be able to go back and make changes to your portfolio site. You'll update it. You'll add new samples. Maybe you'll change your USP. Maybe you'll even change your headline. Maybe what made a lot of sense 1 year, the next year, you're like, actually, I want to change it up or whatever. Yeah. It's not carved in stone. But the important thing is to put your best foot forward. Because remember, this is going to represent you in your stead. When people are thinking, hey, do I want to hire Kate? Do I want to hire Nikki? Do I want to hire Joe or Sally or whoever else? They're going to go to your website, and you're not going to have the opportunity to explain why you're such a great copywriter, what you can do for them. Here are my great samples. Instead, they're going to go to your website, and your website needs to do that for you. Mm-hmm. So go back, listen again, make some notes, because there's a lot of stuff in here, we realize. But this is a prime opportunity for you to really take action on either revising your portfolio site or beginning to build it out. Thanks so much for joining us on the Build Your Copywriting Business podcast. If you liked what you heard, I'd really appreciate it if you could take a minute or two to leave us a 5-star review. I read each one, and they mean the world to me and our team. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. And if you want to keep learning, follow us at Filthy Rich Writer across social media and on the site. And of course, if your interest is piqued and you think copywriting might be right for you, check out our free on-demand video training at www.freecopywritingtraining.com. Talk to you next time.
Moose nose, you type it into Google, the first things that come up: moose nose jelly, moose nose recipe, moose nose soup, moose nose food, moose noises, moose nose bleed, moose nose jelly eating history.
Who is it? Who's like, this is an interesting part of the moose. Let's make a jelly out of it.
Okay. Alaska. In the past, indigenous hunters in the greater Northwest could rely on one whole moose to feed a family for weeks. Every part of the animal was eaten or preserved, including the nose. The moose's long, bulbous snout is still considered a delicacy among indigenous communities. And this is from Atlas of...
I'll look like...
What does moose nose taste like? Moose meat tends to be lean and gamey. Jellied moose nose, however, is more complex. Chef Andrew Zimmern described the dish as exploding with little tastes, likening the flavor to corned beef, in which some of the preparation actually quite looks like corned beef.
Huh.
Yeah.
I hope somebody sends us jars of moose nose jelly.
There, we do have
students. I'll try just about anything.
We have students in Alaska. So.